This week on Vaticano, join us as we commemorate the World Day of the Sick in Lourdes, celebrate the World Day of Consecrated Life, and embark on an exploration of the historic Abbey of Monte Cassino. But first, learn the news from the Vatican. Vaticano starts now. The National Italy-China Federation finds a warm welcome within the Vatican walls, celebrating both the 10th anniversary of its founding and the vibrant festivities of the Chinese New Year. Pope Francis, addressing the assembly, wished that there might be mutual understanding between the Italian and Chinese communities to enhance mutual welcome and a spirit of fraternity. This comes as the Vatican and China navigate a complex relationship, highlighted by recent ecclesiastical appointments under the 2018 Provisional Agreement. In a significant move, the Vatican announced the appointment of Father Peter Wu Yishun as Bishop of Shaowu, marking the third such appointment in China in just a week. The recent bishop appointments and cultural celebrations at the Vatican underscore the delicate balance of faith, diplomacy, and cultural dialogue between the Holy See and China. The renewal of the Vatican-China Agreement on the appointment of bishops expires this year in October. In additional Vatican-China news, the Vatican announced that Pope Francis has created a new diocese in mainland China. The Pope has created the Diocese of Huaifang, which takes its name from the prefecture-level city of more than 9 million people in China's central Shandong province. The Vatican announced the Huaifang Diocese on January the 29th, the day of the consecration of the diocese's first bishop, Bishop Anthony Sun Wenjun. Diocesan borders have been an area of dispute between the Vatican and China in the decades since the Chinese Communist Party came to power and started to redraw diocesan lines. The Pope's elevation of the Diocese of Huaifang accepts the diocesan borders redrawn by Beijing. Pope Francis has sent a special letter to Jewish communities around the world. In the letter, the Holy Father expresses his deep worries about the growing number of attacks on Jews. Just 2 days before this letter, Pope Francis had a private meeting with Israel's ambassador to the Holy See, Raphael Yaakov Schutz. They talked about peace and respecting each other. At the same time, Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, the Vatican's foreign minister, was in Marseille, France, talking about how to make peace between Israel and Palestine. He said that having two countries side by side is the best way to end their long conflict and make sure everyone can live safely and happily. Pope Francis's letter and Archbishop Gallagher's speech in Marseille are part of the Vatican's major effort to help solve the world's many challenges. They want to stop the fighting and help people get along, not just in the Middle East, but everywhere. Tanti fratelli e sorelle.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. The Vatican Dicastery for Doctrine of the Faith released a note on discerning the validity of the sacraments. The new document signed by Pope Francis and Prefect Cardinal Victor Fernandez is titled Gestis Verbisque, or Deeds and Words. Its intention is to help bishops in their task as promoters and custodians of the liturgical life. Pope Francis has centered his Lenten message for 2024 on the Book of Exodus, choosing Through the Desert God Leads Us to Freedom as its main theme. The Holy Father framed his reflection on the departure of the Israelites from Egypt. When a God reveals himself, his message is always one of freedom, says Francis in his message. During Lent 2024, the Pope has encouraged the faithful to undertake exterior examinations. The Vatican is inviting 300 parish priests to come to Rome for a meeting of listening, prayer, and discernment that will help shape the next Synod Assembly discussions. The internal meeting of priests will take place from April 28 to May 2nd with the goal of listening and valuing the experience of parish priests and providing them with an opportunity to experience the dynamism of synodal work at the universal level, as the invitation read. This week, Pope Francis met with his Council of Cardinals in Rome. The Holy Father established a so-called C9 with 9 cardinals in 2013 to support him in the governance of the Universal Church. The Council of Cardinals last met only in early September at Casa Santa Marta. Pope Francis's prayer intention for the month of February is for the terminally ill. Even when little chance for a cure exists, every sick person has the right to medical, psychological, spiritual, and human assistance, the Holy Father said in his video message. He also emphasized that families should not be left alone in these difficult moments. Thank you so much for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Andreas Stonehauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In just a few moments, we'll take you to Lourdes, to the miraculous spring of Our Lady, renowned for its healings. Stay tuned. More on Vaticano starts now. Pope Francis's message for the World Day of the Sick, he emphasizes that the Church's core focus is on the sick, vulnerable, and poor, urging us to prioritize them in our compassion and pastoral care. The Holy Father highlights the importance of maintaining this focus and encourages seeking the intercession of Mary Most Holy, the health of the sick, to guide us in cultivating close and fraternal relationships. February the 11th is the World Day of the Sick, an observation introduced by St. Pope John Paul II as a way for believers to offer prayers for those suffering from illnesses. Pope Francis's message for the 2024 World Day of the Sick will be celebrated under the biblical quote from Genesis, "It's not good for man to be alone." The day coincides with the commemoration of Our Lady of Lourdes and is an important opportunity for all the faithful to reflect on caring for those who are sick, as well as those who provide care for them. The Sanctuary of Our Lady of Lourdes in southwestern France is associated with the sick because of the presence of a miraculous spring from which many people have obtained physical healings.
In your opinion, also speaking to pilgrims, why do people come to Lourdes?
Because they find in Lourdes something unique. The experience of Bernadette, the Grotto of Massabielle, the message she got from the Virgin Mary for the priests and for the world, for the church, for the world, touches the heart of everyone and the experience and the life of everyone, everywhere. And there is a very special atmosphere here. All the people who come in Lourdes make an experience, unique experience of fraternity, of presence of God, quasi-sensitive, of respect, of healing, inner healing, first of all, and sometimes also a real physical healing too. Not officially recognized, all of them, as miracles, but many, many people come here because here they find humanity, real human.
The Sanctuary of Lourdes was founded on the apparitions of the Blessed Virgin to a poor 14-year-old girl, Bernadette Soubirous. The first apparition occurred on the 11th of February, 1858. There were 18 apparitions in total, the last one taking place on the 16th of July of the same year.
What can we learn from Bernadette today? Why is she so inspiring to many people?
That God always chooses the simples, the poorest, and the non-too proud people. Bernadette was really nothing in the eye of the population of Lourdes at that time. Her family was very poor, and, well, when she arrived as a young religious in Nevers, all the sisters heard about Lourdes and about her, but they had never seen her before. And when they saw her arriving in their monastery in Nevers, that Bernadette, they were disappointed because she was so humble, so simple. And I think this is something that Bernadette has to teach us today. God gives us lessons and important words through people unexpected.
The vision Bernadette saw in the hollow of the rock Massabielle was that of a young and beautiful lady, quote, lovelier than I have ever seen. The apparition spoke to Bernadette and told her to drink from a mysterious fountain in the grotto. Water immediately gushed forth. On another occasion, the apparition told Bernadette to go and tell the priests she wished a chapel to be built on the spot and processions to be made to the grotto. 4 years later, in 1862, the bishop of the diocese declared the faithful justified in believing the reality of the apparition. A basilica was built upon the rock of Massabielle by Abbey Dominique Peyremal, the parish priest, and in 1873, the great national French pilgrimages were inaugurated. Pope Leo XIII authorized a special office and a mass in commemoration of the apparition. And in 1907, Pope Pius X extended the observance of this feast to the entire church, which is now observed on February the 11th. The sanctuary of Lourdes embodies the faithful's hope for healing the world over. Physical healing, spiritual healing, and emotional healing.
The real first illness we need to be healed, the real illness that is that can lead to death, it's not the physical visible ones, but the illness of the heart, of the soul. And people come here in order to ask, to pray for the cure of this mortal illness. And the other illness, if it comes, it's just a present, just free present from God.
This year, on the liturgical memorial of Our Lady of Lourdes, the Holy Father reminds us that we are first to heal the sick by healing our relationships. Pope Francis urges embracing love and connection, emphasizing their vital role in personal well-being during vulnerability and addressing societal issues. Pope Francis highlighted the importance of perseverance for the religious life and for the courage to make room for God's action.
I think of you, consecrated sisters and brothers, and of the gift that you are. I think of us Christians today. Are we still capable of waiting? Are we not at times too caught up in ourselves and things and in the intense rhythm of daily life to the point of forgetting God, who always comes?
Instituted in 1997 by Pope St. John Paul II, the World Day for Prayer for Consecrated Life is intended to help the entire Church to esteem ever more greatly the witness of those persons who have chosen to follow Christ by means of the practice of the evangelical councils. The consecrated life, Pope John Paul II wrote in his post-synodal apostolic exhortation, Vita Consecrata, is at the very heart of the Church and ought for this to be celebrated.
The heart of the Church is prayer and charity, the apostolate. In religious life, in consecrated life, there are both. There are men and women who really devote their lives entirely to contemplation, prayer, and adoration, who withdraw from the world to pray for the world and the Church. The other pillar of consecrated life is a concrete action, the apostolate. Many communities have been founded to help people in schools, in hospitals, in missions, in development aid, in many areas of life. And in the consecrated life, this is lived in an exemplary way.
The Catholic Church celebrates the World Day for Consecrated Life on February the 2nd, the Feast of the Presentation of the Lord, the day when the Blessed Mother presented her son in the temple and consecrated him to God.
Venimos de España.
We come from Spain. We are the general government of the Mothers of the Abandoned and St. Joseph of the Mountain. Well, we have come precisely to take advantage of the World Day of Consecrated Life here in Rome, to present ourselves as a government at the feet of St. Peter, to strengthen that faith and thus be able to help the congregation.
Mother Paloma explains the importance of giving visibility to the social work of the consecrated, and the need to celebrate Candlemass to make known the good that is done in the church. Alejandro, on the other hand, recounts his vocation since childhood, a deep desire to become a priest, a calling he recognized from a young age.
Well, basically, considering vocation, it's something that comes from God. In my case, I had the grace to feel it since I was very little, around 6 or 7 years old. It's like this. You have that kind of desire, like a child who wants to become an astronaut. I wanted to become a priest. And although, back then, I didn't really know what it meant, as one grows, I was fortunate to grow up in a, well, Catholic family. We used to go to Mass on Sundays. The vocation itself is a call. It is God who calls us. Well, I felt that call. That vocation to live solely for God, and the vocation is a commitment, in that sense, to consecrated life.
Y la vocación es una entrega, en ese sentido, a la vida consagrada, una entrega total.
In Rome, also on February the 2nd, the Irish College of Rome held a culture night to celebrate the World Day of Consecrated Life and one of Ireland's most important saints, Saint Bridget. There were singers, poets, and artists who came from Ireland to perform pieces of art that were in some way inspired by St. Bridget.
Bridget has been one of the patronesses of Ireland, so along with Patrick. So in terms of the balance, and I suppose the inspiration that she has for many women. Around the same time here in Rome, just last night, they had an exhibition celebrating the life of religious and the contribution that they made over the last 100 years. So Bridget, for many women, was an inspirational woman, a pioneering woman.
On this important day, let us remember to pray for the religious men and women and heed the Holy Father's advice and always be open to be moved by the Spirit and reawaken our longing for God. We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano.
We know that Benedict came to Monte Cassino from Subiaco, where he had begun his monastic life, first in an eremitic form, and then cenobitic form, with a community. Because of the jealousy of a local priest, Benedict decided to leave Subiaco with a group of disciples and arrived to Monte Cassino around the year 529.
Following the destruction of the Roman Acropolis and pagan temples dedicated to Apollo, St. Benedict began construction of various oratories, dedicated, among others, to St. Martin and St. John the Baptist. In this first monastery of the order, St. Benedict wrote down his renowned rule, shaping a monastic life centered around prayer, work, study, and hospitality.
Then, first and foremost, during the Carolingian epoch, thanks to the work of Charles the Great and Saint Benedict himself, the Benedictine rule got diffused and eventually becomes the unique rule for Occidental monasticism. From that moment on, the Benedictine monasticism, from here in Monte Cassino, becomes not only important but unifying for the monastic experience during the reign of Charles the Great, but also in the following epochs. Carlo Magno e delle epoche successive.
The ecclesial and political influence of the abbey peaked in the 11th century, during the time of the great abbot Desiderius, who later became Pope Victor III, and who not only rebuilt the abbey and re-established monastic discipline, but also saw to it that the monastery library became one of the richest in Europe by collecting and translating manuscripts from all cultures, nations, and times into Latin.
Noi qui abbiamo due luoghi dove custodiamo il patrimonio.
Here we have two places where we preserve the literary patrimony. The first place is the archive, where all the old manuscripts are, and the other is the library, which is where we are standing right now, where all the printed books are. We have what we call an ancient source, which is the one we are looking at right now, and which is composed over 32,000 volumes. By ancient sources, we mean incunables, that is, books printed after the inventions of the press by Gutenberg, and all the way until 1830.
Mobili da parte di Gutenberg e fino al 1830.
However, the preservation of the many literary and cultural treasures of the abbey proved to be not an easy feat. Throughout the centuries, the abbey suffered several destructions, such as by the Lombards in 570, by the Saracens in 883, and by an earthquake in 1349. The most notable destruction, however, happened just 80 years ago in 1944, when the monastery was bombed during the Second World War.
The zone where the monks lived, the oldest part of the monastery where the cell of St. Benedict was located, was saved from destruction, so neither monks nor civilians died there, as they did in other zones. Also, the burial place of St. Benedict and St. Scholastica was somehow miraculously saved. The place was saved because a grenade that fell there didn't explode, but there was a loss of lives. And then, of course, for the symbolic value which the abbey represented, certainly there was an event that in some way had a big emotional impact, certainly for this territory and the abbey itself, but also for everything that the abbey represented in Europe and beyond Europe.
Nell'Europa e anche al di là dell'Europa.
Thanks to the help of German priests, most of the abbey's literary and artistic treasures, including those from different national museums that had been sent to the abbey during the war for protection, were evacuated to Rome and saved from destruction. After the war, the monastery was rebuilt and the church reconsecrated by Pope St. Paul VI, who also proclaimed St. Benedict, a patron saint of Europe.
St. Benedict is important because, first of all, he is a point of connection between Eastern monasticism and what you can say later became Western monasticism. And as I was saying before, St. Benedict is also known for the famous motto, Ora et Labora, work and prayer, to which we can also add the imperative read, but we could also add other verbs. I believe that beyond the verbs, it is the et that connects them that is the most important. So St. Benedict, I think, testifies to the importance of a unified, harmonic life. And it isn't for no reason that the Benedictine motif is pax, peace, and that Benedict was proclaimed precisely patron saint of Europe, with the bull that defined him as messenger of peace, and suggested that we can all be signs of instruments of peace in the history and in relation to others, provided that we are able to find an inner peace or harmony within ourselves.
While the abbey used to house over 200 monks during its golden age, the monastery is today the home of 8 Benedictine monks who continue to live a quiet life of prayer, work, and study. Despite the challenges faced by the abbey and its history, the spirit of monasticism has persevered, and monastic life continues to flourish in Monte Cassino.
The monasticism here at Monte Cassino was reborn from all these destructions. After all, the motto of the abbey is Succisa Verescit, meaning cut down, it grows again. We would like to celebrate this 60th anniversary well, since it truly indicates a rebirth. We get to look back at the destruction, but also at the new life born in the destruction.